Welcome to episode 207 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. This show is released the week of September 30th, 2013. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Jensen USA, where you'll find a fantastic selection of complete bikes, components, accessories, apparel, nutrition, and more, all at phenomenal prices with unparalleled customer service. When you need anything for cycling, simply go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And by Fazari Performance Bicycles, where they design and build high-performance road and mountain bikes using the most advanced design techniques, materials, and components. And they sell it all manufacturer direct for huge savings and provide you with a custom fit to ensure comfort, performance, and satisfaction. Go to Fezzari.com, that's F-E-Z-Z-A-R-I.com, to learn more. Now, sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you back here with me, broadcasting live, well, semi-live, from the Fredcast studios right here in Park City, Utah. Hey, great to be back. Promised you another product-related show, and that is exactly what you're going to get. This one is chock full of information on products, product reviews, interviews, all kinds of great stuff, so get ready for that. But before we get started, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about our loyal and longtime sponsor, Jensen USA, at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Jensen USA is the place where you can supply your cycling lifestyle with everything you need, from complete bikes to components and apparel and nutrition and really, come on guys, everything in between. Great selection, fantastic prices, and unparalleled customer service. And this is really cool. Starting on October the 10th, Jensen USA is going to be starting a contest, and they're going to be giving away a 2013 Diamondback Podium 6 road bike, cool carbon fiber frame with Altegra DI2. Nice bike. Now, to enter, it's really simple. All you have to do is sign up for Jensen USA's mailing list or make a purchase from Jensen USA, and that's it. And it all starts on October the 10th. I'll have some more information on their website. But for now, get ready to win, hopefully, a 2013 Diamondback Podium 6. I'll make sure to tweet out links as soon as they're available. But in the meantime, anything that you need for biking, make sure that you go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And, you know, if you go to thefredcast.com, right there on the right-hand side of the page is a link for the picks, things that I've handpicked from Jensen's website that I think that you'll be interested in. So go ahead and check that out and check back there frequently. I change those about every month or so. As always, we appreciate Jensen USA for their support of the Fredcast, and we appreciate you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, since this is a product-related show, we should probably talk a little bit about Interbike 2013, which just concluded in Las Vegas, Nevada. It was a good show. Interbike moved to the Mandalay Bay Convention Center right there in Mandalay Bay. There were a lot of fears about the move. People fearing that, number one, Mandalay Bay was at the end of the earth. It really isn't. It's really quite close to everything on the Strip. The facilities were fantastic. I think for a lot of people, there was a little bit of confusion just because of the floor layout changes. We were used to seeing people in certain locations, and all of a sudden they were in new locations because of the new venue. The food was good. Jim Moss on the spokesman pointed out, and I think he was right, the restrooms were very nice. And I think from my perspective, and I did mention this on the spokesman when we recorded from the video studio there at Interbike, from my perspective, I didn't see a ton of innovation this year. What I saw was a lot of maturation. And simply what I mean by that is a lot of products and product categories over the last few years where we have seen a lot of innovation and perhaps some hesitance on the part of cycling consumers to adopt certain categories and certain technologies. Today, what we saw at Interbike this year was those categories and those product segments maturing and really becoming more mainstream. A great example would be what many of us used to call 650B, now 27.5 inch, and simply that's the wheel size on mountain bikes. And that really seems to have hit its stride, come into mainstream. I mentioned this on The Spokesman as well. When you walked into the Giant Bicycles booth, they had numbers that were, I'm guessing here, 12 feet tall, that simply said 27.5, really making a very strong statement that this is the size wheel that Giant has standardized on when it comes to mountain bikes, or at least the one that they think has the brightest future. So a lot of maturation in the cycling industry this year. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I think that that's a good thing. A lot of people have complained that the bike industry has had its troubles economically over the last few years. And I think that some maturation is a good thing to help stabilize the cycling economy. One thing that I do get concerned about, and something that I did see at Interbike this year, is perhaps too much segmentation of the bike industry. I keep mentioning this, and I'm not quite sure that I'm getting the traction that I think it deserves, but it's something that concerns me. And that is, let's take mountain bikes as an example, or at least off-road riding as an example. Right? For many years, we had the 26-inch mountain bike, we had the cross-country bike, and then, of course, we added the downhill bike. And now, of course, we have the all-mountain bike, the enduro bike. We've got the gravel grinder, the cross-country bike. And my concern is that we run the risk of confusing ourselves when we walk into a bike shop or when we go to an online website to buy a bike. We confuse ourselves. Which bike is right for me? And for many people, they can only afford one bike. Or perhaps their spouse or significant other will only allow them to have one bike. And in those sorts of situations, I think that we do potentially those folks a disservice by segmenting the industry in the way that we have. Now, look, I've seen the same thing in other industries. The ski industry is a great example. I know people here in town, friends of mine when I was a mountain host at Park City Mountain Resort, who had six-ish pairs of skis. Right, they had their powder skis, they had their rock skis, they had their all-mountain skis, they had their GS ski. I mean, they had so many different types of skis, and I've always been a skier who's only had one. And so I always look for one pair of skis that really is going to fit me right, because I spend my money on cycling, not so much on skiing. And for a lot of people, it could be exactly the same way in their cycling. And so I get very concerned about over-segmentation of the industry. Otherwise, the other trend that I noted, and again, I mentioned this on The Spokesman, but I know a lot of you perhaps don't necessarily listen to that show, and that's fine. So I just wanted to mention it here. Another thing that I'm noticing is a lot, of course, of adoption of Ant Plus. For many of you, you know that Ant Plus is the wireless technology really championed by Garmin and adopted by so many others as a way to bring disparate sensor data into your cycling computer or into your smartphone. So data such as your heart rate, your cadence, your speed, your power, using Ant Plus technology, which is a short-range wireless protocol that doesn't use a lot of power, has been a great way to ensure that we can have multiple sensors all over our bike, not be changing batteries or charging sensors constantly, and get that data into our computers and our smartphones. Well, now, and we'll talk about this with a story later in the show about a particular product that's coming to market shortly. Now, Bluetooth is coming on as a potential technology in cycling as well, right? So many of our smartphones are using Bluetooth technology these days. But as you know, if you've got a Bluetooth headset perhaps for your phone, you know that you have to charge your Bluetooth devices fairly frequently. Well, there's a new technology, Bluetooth Low Energy, and Apple is really championing this with their iBeacons technology that they announced recently at their recent event, and which is built into recent models of iPhones. Bluetooth Low Energy uses the Bluetooth wireless protocol, but as its name would suggest, it is a low energy emitting device and therefore low energy consuming device, and therefore it has extended battery length. And with this built into iPhones and other smartphones, the question that I had was, will we be looking at Ant Plus as the Betamax of cycling? For those of you who may not remember, at one time when it came to videotape technology, there was Beta and VHS. And there were many people who agreed that Beta was the superior technology when it came to quality. But, and I'm not going to get into this too deeply, but because one segment of the entertainment industry adopted VHS over Beta, Beta quickly dropped off the consumer radar screen. Now, it continued to be used by professionals in video production, but for consumers, VHS definitely won out over Beta. And I'm wondering whether or not we may be looking at the same thing in the future vis-a-vis Ant Plus and Bluetooth. I'm curious to see how that comes out. So overall, my theme for Interbike was maturation over innovation. Now, one thing I also wanted to mention to you is that when I go to Interbike these days, I get hired by Interbike to host their Good Morning Interbike. It's sort of our morning show of the trade show, a lot like Good Morning America or the Today Show or any other morning show that you'll see across the country and indeed across the world. And so I get the honor of interviewing luminaries in the cycling industry. I had a lot of great interviews from the show. Tony Ellsworth really stands out in my mind as one that I really enjoy just because he and I kind of geeked out on technology a little bit, and that was kind of cool. I had Chris Carmichael, I had Tim Blumenthal from People for Bikes, and a lot of other great folks. And I'd urge you to go back and watch those videos. I've got a link in the show notes for Interbike TV on YouTube and to our playlist for Good Morning Interbike 2013. Also on YouTube and also in the show notes, I did a couple of interviews on my own for you, the Fredcast listener, that you can go ahead and check out. One that I really enjoyed, I had the opportunity to interview the founder and CEO of Jensen USA, our longtime sponsor. I had a chance to sit down for a chat with Mike Cachet from Jensen USA, and I really enjoyed it. And by the way, that's not an advertisement. It was just a great conversation, just giving you a little bit of insight into their business and their advocacy. And as somebody who really likes talking to entrepreneurs, I just found it very, very interesting. I think that you will as well. I also had the chance, I met a young man who developed a product called Spruza at spruzamist.com. There's two Z's in that word. And I just was taken by him and by his product and by his story. And so we sat down in the Good Morning Interbike studios and we had a little chat about that. And last but not least, on the Fredcast channel, and certainly a lot of fun to do, and we do it every year. I had a chance to sit down with my fellow spokesman from the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. We had Tim Jackson from Focus Bicycles. We had Chris Smith from Laser Helmets. We had Jim Moss from recreationlaw.com, and we had Rich Kelly, formerly of Interbike and now of the National Bicycle Dealers Association. And we sat down, we talked about Interbike and a couple of other things, and we also had a little bit of show and tell of products that we found at Interbike that we really liked. So go ahead and check that out. I think that you will really enjoy it. And again, links are in the show notes. Well, since this episode of the Fredcast is another episode simply about products, our news segment is going to take a slightly different tack, if you will, today. And so we're going to be talking about websites and products, and yes, of course, unfortunately, some product recalls. But the first one I want to start with is a new website and smartphone app that you may have heard of. And I'm also curious to know if any of you have used it, and if so, please send us a voicemail. I would love to hear your comments and your thoughts and your experiences in using this app and this website. The website is called SpinLister at spinlister.com. The concept itself is pretty simple. It's a, if you will, peer-to-peer bike rental company. Here's the way that it works. You've got bikes in your garage. Many of us do. And a lot of them are not being ridden on a day-to-day basis. And if you listen to SpinLister, those bikes are money. You're leaving money on the table by leaving them hanging or sitting in your garage. So why not list your bikes and allow them to be rented by others, perhaps who live in your area, or perhaps maybe they're visiting your area. You simply go onto SpinLister, you list your bike, you put some details about it, you put a couple of photos up, and then you sit and you wait. And then somebody who wants to rent your bike can find it by searching on the SpinLister website or via the app. They get some information and then they contact you. And then they rent the bike from you at a price that you set. Now, SpinLister is going to take a 17.5% service charge from the person who owns the bike. But they also are providing you with the platform on which your bike is listed and the ability to get together with somebody who wants to rent it. And as long as you've got an account balance over $50, you will get paid every 2 weeks. If it's under $50 at the time that they would normally pay you, they'll just roll it over to the next period. But you'll never have to wait more than a month. So if at the end of 4 weeks, your balance is less than $50, they will pay you. You set the rate for what you charge for your bike, and then they pay you. Now, safety, security, always a concern. According to SpinLister, they will essentially insure your bike if it gets lost or stolen while it's being rented by somebody who found you on SpinLister. They will pay you for your bike up to a value of $5,000. And this is only in the United States and Canada. I'm not sure what they're doing in other countries, because according to the website, they are in numerous other countries as well. And by the way, they also say, hopefully they're not joking, if they lose your bike, not only will they cover it up to $5,000, they'll also buy you a cake for what that's worth. Now, I have not rented from SpinLister. I have not listed any bikes on SpinLister, but I've spent a lot of time exploring SpinLister. And I'll tell you, for instance, in my area is very heavy on mountain bikes. The closest road bike I was able to find was about 20 miles away down in Salt Lake City. Otherwise, I saw cruisers and mountain bikes in my area. One problem I did have with the app on my iPhone was that when I found bikes, there wasn't a lot of detail. For instance, I didn't know what size the bike was, and so that was a problem. However, when I went to the SpinLister website, the size information was there. So it would be nice if that was in the smartphone app as well. Another thing that I did like is the fact that there is the ability for you to leave a review about the bike and about the person from whom you rented the bike. I kind of like that. But as I searched around, it seems to me that perhaps SpinLister isn't being used that often, because as I clicked through various bikes, I did not see more than one review, but the majority of them had zero reviews. And so that was a little bit of a concern as to whether or not this is a service that will last. I hope it does, because as somebody who travels, I think that I would use this. It would be a lot more convenient to rent a bike in advance and know what all about that bike than to bring a bike with me. Now, let me give you an example. I've got an upcoming trip to St. Louis, Missouri. So I went on to SpinLister, onto their website, and I put in St. Louis, Missouri, looking for a bike. I found a great bike. Now, of course, I'm still recovering from my shoulder surgery, so unfortunately, I can't actually rent this bike. But if and when I go back to St. Louis, I will. It's a 2011 Pinarello Dogma with Campagnolo record components. The thing looks brand spanking new, and the guy is renting it for $30 per day, which, as somebody who's rented high-end road bikes around the country, I have to tell you, that's a phenomenal price. Don't raise your price, please, sir, because I'd like to rent your bike someday. But that's a phenomenal price. And so I would totally want to rent this particular bike if and when I'm back in St. Louis and ready to go out on the road. So SpinLister looks like a great service. I hope that it lasts. Oh, and one last thing. I also noticed that it looks like they're gearing up to also start offering the ability for you to rent snow sports equipment, snowboards and skis and the like. When I clicked the link, I got a 404, but it's a great idea if they offer that as well. So go ahead and check it out. It's at spinlister.com. Hey, back on episode number 198, I introduced you to a new service that had just launched called Swagbox. And if you'll recall, it was loosely associated with the guys over at BikeRumor.com, and they asked me if I would introduce it here on the Fredcast to Fredcast listeners. And I also asked you, if you signed up for it, if you would let me know your experiences. Now, Swagbox, the deal was you would sign up for a subscription, and then once a month they would send you a box full of, guess what? Swag. The deal was, you know, you'd get nutrition, perhaps socks, a variety of different products that you would get through the mail that would be really cool to receive on a regular basis. And I think the idea was, in some ways, it was a bit of advertising, obviously, for these companies, because if they sent you a product and if you liked it, chances were you might buy it or tell your friends about it, and therefore their sales would increase. Well, unfortunately, earlier this summer, those of you who did sign up for Swagbox got the following email. It said, "Dear Swagboxers, Swagbox is canceling all subscriptions. This was a very difficult decision, and we are truly sorry. Your membership will be refunded for the months remaining in your subscription." The email went on to say, "We are simply unable to provide the quality of service that you have paid for and expect at this time. The changes we were working on were steps in the right direction, were too few and too late. For those of you who think Swagbox is as cool as we do, the silver lining is that we can use this opportunity to improve on inefficiencies, website capability, survey service, and overall management to," and here's the part that may give you some hope, "to possibly re-release Swagbox again in 2014. So unfortunately, Swagbox seems to have shut down for now. Hopefully they will be back. What's interesting is I've also heard from a number of different companies that are offering a similar service. So it seems to me that this is at least an idea that people like and one that may have legs, but perhaps for whatever reasons, it just was too challenging for the guys at Swagbox. But hopefully they will be back. So just a little wrap up, just to close that circle on what we talked about on episode 198. Too bad. And while we're on the topic of websites, this one may be a little bit controversial, so stand by, guys. Many of you likely are fans of Strava. For those of you who don't know what Strava is, although I've seen it on the national news lately. Anyway, for those of you who don't know what Strava is the social fitness tracking website that encourages you to increase your performance by allowing you to compete against your friends and strangers in your area on a variety of segments on popular rides. So, for example, let's say in your area there is a climb that everyone does. I'll give you an example here. In Griffith Park, in the suburbs of Los Angeles, there is a climb near the Los Angeles Zoo. A lot of people call it Garbage Truck Hill or Trash Truck Hill because there is or was a solid waste dump nearby. Anyway, let's say that you ride that frequently. And so do a lot of other people in Los Angeles, trust me. And you want to compare your performance against them. You upload your data from your cycling computer, typically a GPS unit from Garmin or perhaps from the guys over at PowerTap, the Cyclops Joule. You upload that data into Strava. And by the way, Strava, of course, also has a smartphone application, and then you're able to compare your performance against others, and there are achievements. So the person who has the fastest time is the king or the queen of the mountain. And if you are a paid subscriber, you can really filter down that data by gender, by age, etc. So you can really see how you're doing against people similar to your gender and age range. Well, you can imagine there's a lot of competition that goes along here. And just like in the Tour de France of the last couple of decades, with that level of competition, people want to find a way to enhance their performance. And there are two websites that will allow you to do just that. The first is digitalepo.com, digitalepo.com. And the second is epomyride.com. With Digital EPO, you can upload directly from your Garmin device, or you can use your Garmin.tcx file, and you simply upload that into their website, and then you give them a percentage by which you'd like them to increase your speed so that hopefully then you can be the king or the queen of the mountain. Meanwhile, over on epomyride.com, you do essentially the same thing, except in that case, you use a GPX file. GPX files can come from a variety of different devices and not just proprietary Garmin devices. And then you can upload those right into Strava. It doesn't change the data on your device. It only gives you a file that you upload into Strava, so you know what your real performance was. Strava finds out what your juiced performance was. You upload that into Strava, and then, of course, you look like the monster cyclist with the huge quads that you know you are not. How do I feel about this? Great question, and I'm glad you asked. Look, this really isn't for me. I mean, Strava's not for me, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but I think you know how I feel about rule breaking and cheating and all those kinds of things. And while there really aren't any rules per se when it comes to Strava, from an ethical standpoint, just from a moral standpoint, it doesn't sit that well with me. It's if that's what you want to do, if you want to go on there and you want to indicate that you have a better performance than others, and that makes you feel good, go right ahead. To be honest with you, I haven't been on Strava in, well, almost a year. And the reason for that is, even before these websites came out, it was clear that a lot of the performances on there were people driving in cars or perhaps using motorcycles to try to show that they could be king or queen of the mountain. And then the people that had mistakenly left their GPSs on when their bikes were on their roof rack or in the back of their SUV weren't going in and fixing those segments. And therefore, I just found that Strava it became a bunch of noise. Now, I know a lot of you find a lot of fun and use for it, but hey, now that you see that people are enhancing their performances, now you need to decide for yourself whether or not you think that the data on there is authentic. For me, my cycling isn't about competition. My cycling is about improving my health, improving my fitness, and enjoying cycling. And if I'm going to be constantly competing against others, that, quite frankly, I do enough of that in business and in my day job life. Cycling is about recreation for me. I just want to get out, enjoy myself, improve my health and my fitness and my own performance for my own edification. I don't need to prove myself to anybody else. But I know a lot of you are really into that competition, and Strava may be for you, but now you need to know your friends may be juicing their rides, even if they're not juicing their bodies. So keep that in mind. Well, again, since the focus of this show is on products, it is time, unfortunately, to talk about a couple of product recalls. Two, to be exact, one from Giant and one from Shimano. The first is carbon seat posts from Giant bicycles. This recall involves about 200 2013 model year Giant XTC Advanced SL 29er 0 and 29er 1 series bikes and their 27.2 millimeter carbon fiber seat posts. Now, those seat posts came on the bikes and they were sold separately. The SL 29er 0 is white, black, and blue. The SL 29er 1 is white, black, and red, and the letters XTC, X-Ray Tango Charlie, appear on the down tube of the frame on both bikes. On the seat posts themselves, the name Giant and Contact SLR, Sierra Lima Romeo, appear on the 27.2 millimeter carbon fiber seat post. The problem here is that the seat post could break. Thankfully, there have been no injuries reported, even though they've received 5 reports of seat post breaking. By the way, I've had 2 carbon fiber seat posts break in the past. I've probably talked to you about that before. It's scary. I was injured in one. I was not injured in the other, but it made for a difficult ride home, if you will. So if you have one of these bikes and they were sold nationwide between November 2012 and May 2013 for between $4,300 and $7,700 or $200 just for the seat post, which was sold separately, if you have one of these, You know what to do. I've said, told you enough times. Stop using the bike, stop using the seat post, and contact Giant, in this case, at 866-458-2555. That's 866-458-2555. Or go to giant-bicycles.com and you will be able to get more information. Plus, of course, I have links in the show notes to the full recall on these Giant bikes. Next up, Shimano has recalled disc brake calipers due to a collision hazard. In this case, there's about 6,600 of these in the United States and about 704, that's about 704, in Canada. And this involves all Shimano BR-CX75 disc brake calipers and BR-R515 disc brake calipers. Now, the first ones, the BR-CX75, were aftermarket. And the second ones, the BRR515, were installed OEM on road and cyclocross bikes by BMC, Giant, Ibis, Raleigh, Shinola, Specialized, and Volaggi. In each case, the words Shimano and China are embossed on the outside of the brake calipers, which is pretty much for most Shimano products. Both models have either black or silver finishes. Now, it's going to be hard for you to tell whether or not you have one of these disc brake calipers. I would strongly suggest that you have your disc brake calipers inspected if you bought your one of those brand bikes or you bought new disc brake calipers from Shimano between February 2012 and May 2013. If you bought them separately, they would have been going for about $75. You can get more information again on the website at thefredcast.com. I've got complete information about both of these recalls, but please, if you suspect that you have a product that may be covered by one of these recalls or any of the recalls I've discussed before, do yourself a favor. Stop riding your bike and go ahead and take it to your local independent bike dealer and have them check it out. And lastly, before we get into the features today with some product reviews and an interview, a new product seems to be coming on the market, and this purports to be the world's first smart bicycle helmet. It's from a company called LifeBeam. Now, from what I've learned by going through their website and their promotional materials, these guys have been involved in putting biometric sensors in the helmets of fighter pilots. You can imagine with the G-forces and the stress on the human body that can happen in a modern, technologically advanced fighter jet. It's important to see how the pilot is being affected by the stresses caused by the flight and the airplane for a variety of different reasons. Well, as cyclists, we also like to monitor our own metrics, including biological data such as heartbeat. The problem is, at least according to these folks, that we have to wear heart rate straps around our chest. And for a lot of people, that can be uncomfortable and a bit cumbersome. Well, we're already wearing a helmet. And so what these folks have done is they've gone ahead and designed a sensor that fits into a bicycle helmet and a transmitter so that the sensor is at the front of the helmet and it's gently touching your forehead, and using what they call electro-optical technology, it continuously measures your heart rate while you are cycling. Meanwhile, that data is then transmitted to your smartphone or to your bicycle computer via Ant Plus or Bluetooth. Just talked about that. Using this transmitter that's built into the back of the helmet. Now, LifeBeam is going to be available soon. It looks like they are finishing up their safety testing, and the first helmet that it will be available in is a Laser Genesis. Now, I just sort of went online and checked prices for a Laser Genesis helmet and found that they're about $175, $180 in that range when you buy them from a bike dealer. LifeBeam is saying that they are going to sell their helmet for $199. So just a little bit of a bump in the helmet price also gets you the heart rate sensor with the Ant Plus or the Bluetooth technology built in. So I thought about this a little bit and I thought, hey, that's kind of a really cool thing. But number one, if it's only built into one brand and model of helmet, well, I happen to wear a Laser helmet, you might not. Well, I happen to like laser helmets. You might not. You might like Bell or Jira or so, or somebody else. And so how will you get this into your helmet? Well, I'm sure at some point in the future, you'll be able to buy this for a variety of different helmets. But the other issue that came to my mind, besides battery life, because although it is USB rechargeable, so we don't know what the battery life of this will be, whereas my heart rate strap, it seems to me I only change the battery maybe once a year, something like that. So besides battery life and the fact that I'm sort of pigeonholed into using the helmet that they are fitted with at the moment, the other thing I thought of was, hey, you know, I've got multiple helmets. I've got a different helmet for mountain biking and a different helmet for road riding. And perhaps if you like downhilling, you might also have a different helmet for downhilling. So that would mean that if you want to be able to monitor your heart rate in all of those activities, you would have to have a LifeBeam equipped helmet for all of those activities. Whereas right now I've just got the same heart rate strap that I wear for all activities. That may not be an issue to you, but something that I was thinking about. I'm curious to see when these come on the market, if they are popular. I think it's an interesting idea. And the more we talk about wearable technology in tech, the more we're going to see ideas like this come up. Now, there's a lot of people who have talked about the rumored iWatch from Apple and whether or not that will also include some biometric sensors. That should be interesting as well. But this is one of the latest to come on the market, and you can find more information in the show notes. Well, before we move on in the show, it's time to thank another of our show's sponsors, and that is Fezzari Bicycles at Fezzari.com. Now, Fezzari Bicycles employs, well, extremely well-known Fezzari engineering, design, and manufacturing to ensure that the bike you get is at the quality level that you expect. In addition, every single Fezzari bike is custom fit perfectly for you. Using their proprietary method, they ensure that the bike that you receive is ready to go and is already fit for you so that you don't have to spend that additional time, money, and effort on getting a bike fitting at your local bike dealer. Now, this sounds expensive, right? High quality bike, high quality components, great design, and a custom fit. That's going to be too expensive. But no, that's because Fezzari sells direct to consumers, meaning that you are going to save and get the best bike at an incredible value every single time. Here's an example. The brand new 2014 Fezzari 4A CR1, at retail, you might pay $2,200, $2,500, $3,000, but from Fezzari, you're going to pay only $1,399, and that's for a full carbon Shimano 105 bike. I would encourage you to go and check out Fezzari.com. They've just launched their new 2014 edition of their website and the new 2014 models of their road and mountain bikes. Check them out. Once you do, I know that you're going to be interested in buying your next bike from Fezzari. And why not? Because every Fezzari comes with an unconditional 30-day money-back guarantee. Go ahead and check them out at Fezzari.com. That's F-E-Z-Z-A-R-I.com. And be sure to tell them that you heard about it here on the Fredcast. Thanks so much to Fezzari for supporting the Fredcast. And thank you for supporting Fezzari. Well, let's get right into the product review, starting with a new brand of sunglasses that, quite frankly, I had never heard of before. It's XX2I, X-ray, X-ray, the number 2I as in India. XX2I came to my attention because I got an email from the distributors of Rudy Project. The distributors are called Running and Cycling Enterprises, or RACE for short. And they'd emailed me a new press release about some Rudy Project sunglasses, and I got back to them and I said, hey, you know, I'd really love to give these a test. And in return, I got an email saying, you know what, before you try the Rudy's, I've got a new brand of sunglasses I'd really like you to try, and it's called XX2I. I was a bit hesitant at first, but I agreed and they sent them to me. And I've now given them a nice long test, and I wanted to give you my impressions. Now, they sent me two types of glasses. The first were their USA 1 model, and the second were their France 1 model. Now, the USA is more of a casual type glass with a full frame around the lens. And the France is more of a cycling style sport glass along the lines of the kinds of styles that you're used to from Oakley and Rudy and Tifosi and people like that. Now, before I started wearing the glasses, I did a little bit of research into the company. XX2i offers a lot of benefits and a lot of value for the money. For instance, they have a lifetime frame and lens warranty. They have a 1 year, 365 days, a 1 year money back guarantee. They claim that their glasses offer full adjustability. All of their glasses come with multiple lenses included and a hard case as well as a soft case. And they also offer polarized versions and what seems to be one of the trends that we saw at Interbike this year, a version that includes readers. In other words, as you're riding and you want to look down and look at your computer as we get older, it seems like our computer just isn't far away enough anymore. And they have readers built in a variety of different powers. So I've given both the France and the USA a nice, good, long test. The USA, I got two pairs of glasses in one of XX2i's dual kits. They came in a rather large hard case with multiple soft cases and multiple lenses included. There was a sort of tortoiseshell color as well as a black color. And what I've started doing is I leave the tortoiseshell in my car here at home, and then the black glasses go with me when I travel. So I'm always wearing essentially the same glasses no matter where I am. And I've worn them on long drives, on long walks. I've worn them just about everywhere that I've been over the last, I want to say about 6, maybe 8 months. For the France, they've become my go-to cycling sunglasses because I wanted to give them a good long try as well. Now, I only got one pair, but I also got multiple lenses of the France as well. Now, I have worn the France cycling, and I've also worn them skiing, and I found them to be comfortable. I think because the nose pads are adjustable, and I've got sort of a, well, okay, fine, I've got a big nose. Plus, I've broken it twice, so it's sort of oddly shaped at the bridge, right where the glasses are going to touch my nose. And so having those adjustable nose pads has been really good. Plus, I've got sort of a wide head, and the temples are adjustable as well. So I found them to be very comfortable, even on long rides. The USA are also just as adjustable as the France, also good on long drives. And a test that I sort of do with sunglasses, I like to wear sunglasses with my ski helmet. Normally I wear my goggles with my ski helmet, but sometimes on a particularly sunny day, I like to wear sunglasses. And one of the issues that I have with a lot of sunglasses is that when I wear them with my ski helmet, after a relatively short period of time, they really start digging into my temples, sort of gouging sort of channels in my temples. But I was very comfortable with the France when I wore them with my ski helmet, and I was able to wear them a lot longer than a lot of competitive sunglasses that I just normally can't wear with my ski helmet. They're just not comfortable. Now, as I said, and I'll get into the particular details in a moment, both the USA and the France come with multiple lenses. On the France, switching out the lenses was, for somebody who's ever had sport glasses before, extremely easy to do. You've done this a million times, you know how to do it. But to be honest, on the USA, when I needed to figure out how to change those lenses, it was a little scary. Well, okay, to me. I just looked at it and I said, I'm not quite sure how I get these out. I don't want to break the frame. I don't want to break the lenses. I did a little bit of Googling around and I found some tips. And then once I had done the first lens, it was very, very simple to do thereafter. But it was a little bit scary. And I think that the first time you try it on yours, you'll probably be equally as scared. But just know that it's doable and it will be, everything will be fine. Now, I compared prices of glasses when I started to do this review, and I was really sort of pleasantly surprised. If you look at a pair of Oakleys for, say, sport glasses, something you're going to wear cycling, you're going to pay anywhere from $140 to $200 plus for a single pair of glasses, typically with just a single lens. On the other end of the spectrum, we've also got Tifosi, where you're going to get multiple lenses. You're probably going to pay about $60. For the France, they're $55 for the single set and $149 for the dual set, where you would get two frames and all those multiple lenses. Meanwhile, on the casual side, if you went to Smith, you'd probably spend about $140, $150 for a pair of glasses. Tifosi, about $60. For the XX2i USA, you're going to spend about $55 for the dual set, pardon me, for the single set, and about $149 for the dual set. So what do you get in the dual kit? In a dual kit, you get two frames, five pairs of lenses, a hard case, two microfiber soft carrying pouches that can be used also as a cleaning cloth, plus three microfiber lens pouches. For the single kit, you're going to get a frame, one pair of lenses, a hard case, and a microfiber soft carrying pouch that can be used as a cleaning cloth. Pretty good value, in my opinion. I have been really pleased with my XX2Is. They really are my go-to glasses. I've worn them in hot temperatures, cold temperatures, everything in between. As I said, driving, cycling, skiing, and I've had absolutely no problems with them. The optical clarity is very good. The visibility out of them is very good, both straight on and peripheral vision. I've been very pleased with my XX2i sunglasses. And for me, number one, I tend to be cheap to begin with. And number two, as somebody from a sunglass company told me one time, most people tend to lose or break sunglasses within about a month or two of purchasing them. That's a bit scary when you consider what you pay for your sunglasses. With that in mind, personally, I like the idea of a value pair of sunglasses. I've gotten a lot out of my XX2i, and I'm planning on wearing them again in the future. Go ahead and check them out. They're at xx2i.com. If I were to give you like sort of a star rating, 5 stars, I'd probably give them about a 4.5 star. I've really been very pleased with them. Go ahead and check them out. Earlier this summer, I had the opportunity once again to attend the Outdoor Retailer Show here in Salt Lake City. In the summertime, they have the Summer Market Show, and coincidentally, in the wintertime, they have the Winter Market Show. One of the things, well, there were really two things that I noticed were a huge trend at this year's Outdoor Retailer Show. The first, iPhone cases. They were everywhere, and we're going to talk about that again in a moment, but the other thing that was huge at this year's Outdoor Retailer was outdoor Bluetooth wireless speakers, speakers that you can pair to your phone and take with you almost anywhere. So what was interesting was a few days after the show, I received a press release about a new speaker, and I responded and said, hey, why don't you send me one of these for review? And what I got for review is from a company called Wireless Audio Experience, or WAE. This is their Hercules BTP, Bravo, Tango, Papa, 04 wireless portable speaker. The unit itself is about, it's about 2.5 inches high by about 6 inches wide, and again, about 2.5 inches deep. It's triangular shaped, and it weighs just under 10 ounces. It includes a lithium ion battery that they say will last for about 14 hours. I tested it over a weekend and found that I got about 10 or 12 hours, which was pretty respectable. That battery is rechargeable using a standard micro USB cable, so that's also extremely convenient. Now, one of the things that makes this speaker really stand out is the fact that it is made for outdoor use. According to the manufacturer, it is water resistant, dust resistant, and shock resistant. As a matter of fact, I tested it in a variety of different locations, inside, outside. As a matter of fact, I even took it in the shower just to see whether or not it was going to withstand the water that was in the shower, as well as the steam, and absolutely it stood up quite nicely. It's very well constructed with rubberized end caps and a very nice impact resistant grill. So it's attractive, and it's also durable. Sound quality, I thought the clarity was excellent, with a strong bass, a clear treble, and a good mid-range. Now, it's a bit bassy for spoken word. I listened to a couple of podcasts and talk radio broadcasts with it. While it's a bit bassy for spoken word, I did not find that overly distracting. Now, one of the issues that I did have with it was that the volume, when it's paired with my iPhone, it's acceptable volume. If I turn the volume all the way up on the iPhone and I go ahead and turn it all the way up on the speaker as well. But when I used it in my trainer room, my pain cave, it really wasn't as loud as I would have liked it to have been in order to drown out the sound of the trainer. And that meant that when I was listening to music, I couldn't hear the softer parts of songs or softer songs in general. I did download both the iPhone and the Android app. WAE makes an app for both iPhone and Android that they say you can use to view the battery level on the speaker, adjust the volume, turn the speaker off remotely to save the battery, access your iTunes library. There's an equalizer, and they say there's even more. Now, I had a lot of problems using the app on Android, but on iPhone, while I had some problems, it did provide me with some nice benefits. Number one, the ability to utilize an equalizer. So if I wanted to turn down that bass, I could, and I could also, of course, fiddle with mid-range and treble as well. I was never able to figure out how I was able to view the battery level, and while I could adjust the volume, it was only allowing me to adjust the volume on my iPhone and not the actual volume on the speaker. Of course, there's separate speaker volume controls. So even if I turned the volume all the way up in the app, it was really only adjusting the iPhone volume. I could still go up to the speaker and press the plus button and make it even louder, which showed me that it was not adjusting the speaker's actual volume. I was never able to see the battery level. And while it says that you can turn the speaker off remotely, it was disabled on my iPhone app, so it simply was not possible. Now I'm using the latest version of iOS, and I'm using an iPhone 5S, so there's no reason why it shouldn't have worked unless the company is considering making an upgraded version. Included in the app is a database of live online radio stations, very similar to the one, and perhaps it could be identical to the one in either Wonder Radio or TuneIn Radio. As far as the Android version, I was never really able to get it to work. Even though my phone was connected to the speaker, and I had confirmed that, the WAE app was never able to actually find the speaker, and I powered cycled both several times, and I still ended up having the same problem. Now, the fact that the app doesn't work isn't a deal breaker to me because, quite frankly, if I'm going to buy an external wireless speaker, I'm not expecting it to come with its own app. I'd prefer to use the built-in iPhone or Android apps. What I do like about it is that it's very light and compact and would fit into a backpack or a camelback really easily. I wouldn't worry about it getting damaged in there, and I really would not notice the weight. One thing I didn't like, but that you might, is the fact that in addition to being a speaker, it can also be a speaker phone. Now, I set it on the shelf here in my office, and I was listening to it during my workday, and when a phone call would come in, what I would really expect is that I'd be able to answer it on my phone, but instead what would happen was the call would be routed to the speaker, and that was a bit distracting and a bit confusing, and I would really prefer that it not act in that way. So overall, I thought the sound was good, could be a little bit louder. I thought that the usability was extremely easy as long as I wasn't using their app, and I really liked the durability and portability of the WAE BT P04 Hercules wireless speaker. If you buy one, inside the box you're going to find a USB cable, a snap hook, a protective pouch, and a wrist strap. And what you'll also find is on the bottom there is the standard size screw so that if you wanted to put this, say, for instance, on a tripod, you'd be able to mount that really easily. Now, they also offer what they call an adventure pack, and that includes a bike mount, a suction cup mount, a backpack attachment clip, and a cigarette lighter charger. Now, the suggested retail for just the regular pack is $129.99, although it is on Amazon for $83. I've got a link in the show notes for that. The adventure pack suggested retail is $179.99, and it is also on Amazon for about $149. If I were to go back to my star rating, I think overall I would probably give this about 3.5 stars, really only taking off that 1.5 stars because I'd really like to get better volume, and I thought that the app was sort of buggy and they probably shouldn't have bothered with that. But from a durability standpoint, a portability standpoint, and a sound clarity standpoint, I thought that it was a really nice piece of hardware. Once again, it's the Hercules WAE Outdoor Bluetooth Speaker BTP04. Now, as I mentioned at this year's Outdoor Retailer Show, well, actually, at this year's Interbike Show, Two of the categories that were quite popular as you walked around booths were Bluetooth speakers, which we just talked about, and protective smartphone cases. And I had the opportunity recently to test two of the more popular iPhone cases. And I wanted to give you my comparison, my thoughts about each of these two protective iPhone cases. The two cases that I wanted to test were really market leaders. The first from Pelican. Pelican, well known for their very protective line of luggage, camera cases, etc. And the second from LifeProof. LifeProof has come on in the last couple of years to become a market leader when it comes to highly protective cases for electronics. Now, both of these cases, in one way or another, are touted as having some level of water resistance, dust resistance, snow resistance, and of course, some shock or impact resistance. And both of these perform quite well in each of these categories. But if I were going to summarize my results after having tested both of these cases for extended periods of time on my iPhone 5, I would say that it's my opinion that if you want protection, you're going to, number one, of course, lose the sort of elegant industrial design of the iPhone. And more importantly, you're going to have to strike a balance. And you're going to have to come to an understanding that if you're going to want protection, you're going to lose some level of functionality. And so you need to decide what is more important to you. But I'll tell you what, let's talk about each case in detail, and then we can circle back to this issue of function versus protection. So first, let's talk a little bit about the Pelican case, because we haven't talked about it here on the show before. The Pelican case is really three pieces. The first is what they call the vault, which essentially cradles your phone in thermoplastic, very tough thermoplastic, sort of that patented Pelican look and feel. And inside the thermoplastic is a very tough rubberized cradle, if you will, that just holds your phone in there very, very nicely. So the first thing you do is you put your phone into this vault. The next thing you do is you put on a rubberized and clear plastic cover, and that's what's going to cover your touchscreen. And then on top of that is a metal, I believe it's an aluminum plate, that goes over all of that, sandwiches your phone with that plastic touchscreen cover in with the vault case, and then that screws into the vault using four hex head screws. So by the time you're done, you've got really quite a well-constructed and very durable, at least from an impact resistance standpoint, very durable iPhone case. Very easy to operate the home button, very easy to operate the power button and the volume controls. But along the side, what they've done is they've given you a little dial. This dial is used for operating the little switch on the side of the iPhone for muting your iPhone. And the way that the dial works is that as you turn it, that's about 30 degrees, as you turn it about 30 degrees, it will then actuate that switch up or down. If you're like me and you've got kind of big fingers, it's a little bit difficult to get your fingers around and get it to turn. And one of the things that I noticed was unless you were able to turn it all the way quickly, sometimes it didn't actually engage and it wasn't possible to put your phone into silent mode or put it back into ringer mode. And I kind of didn't like that. I will say that on the pro side, I think it provides excellent protection, sort of that famed Pelican protection. That dial is kind of nice because it gives you something that you can absolutely grab onto and make that switch, but it does stick out a little bit and sometimes it got hung up on my pocket. On the con side, I would say it's kind of big and bulky, and quite frankly, it's really not very attractive. But I mean, you're really looking for protection here. You're not really looking for beauty, right? You're looking for brawn. Couple of problems that I really had with this case. Number one, I thought that the screen sensitivity was diminished, particularly along the edges, because there's this raised metal frame all along the edges of the touchscreen. And I think that that could be part of the problem. This was particularly an issue for me when I needed to dismiss an ad with a little small X in the corner. You've all seen those. And the other issue I had, I use a podcast application called Downcast. It's pretty popular. And if I want to skip forward or backward in a particular episode, there's little buttons at the top of the screen that allow me to go forward 30 seconds or back 15 seconds, etc. And I simply was unable to push down and get those to actuate. And it wasn't like my finger wasn't hitting the screen. I just think for some reason that metal frame was interfering with my finger or with the registration of my touch on the touchscreen. On the top, where the power button is, while it's easy to access, it doesn't provide very good tactile feedback. So sometimes it's kind of hard to tell whether or not you've actually pressed your power button. And one issue I had that you might not bother you, you know, I really like the Retina screen on my iPhone 5. And as with any screen protector that you're going to put over your screen, you're going to get a little bit of distortion of that beautiful image. To me, it looked a little bit like what in the printing industry they call moiré, where you get sort of a halo effect around certain colors. And that's just sort of bothered me a little bit. Now, Pelican says that this is water resistant, whereas LifeProof claims a certain amount of waterproof protection down to a certain depth. And so that was, to me, sort of a plus for LifeProof. A plus, in my opinion, for Pelican is that whereas with LifeProof, you have to unscrew something at the bottom of the iPhone in order to access the headphone port, and a lot of times you have to use a special headphone extender with LifeProof. With Pelican, they have these really nice rubberized flaps that pull out that will provide protection as long as they're in place, but can easily just pull out and they won't get lost. That little screw on the LifeProof, I've lost several of them already because it detaches and then you lose it. And these are attached quite sturdily, so I don't think those are going to go anywhere. One of the things that Pelican offers, LifeProof offers something similar, is they offer a bike mount. The one from Pelican seems quite secure. It mounts to the handlebar, but it was kind of big and bulky. And at least for me on my road bike, it just seemed way too bulky for me to use on my road bike. So that is the Pelican. Now, we've certainly talked about the LifeProof case before, and we've talked about the level of protection that it provides to your iPhone or other device for which LifeProof makes cases. Again, whereas Pelican claims water resistance, LifeProof says that you can fully submerge your device down to about 7 feet, 6.6 feet, for up to an hour. Of course, they also say that it's snowproof, which kind of makes sense. If it's waterproof, it's dirtproof, and it is shockproof. I have no doubt that both of these cases have good shock resistance and good impact resistance. If I were to give a positive to one over the other, the Pelican just seems to me to offer more impact resistance than the LifeProof case. I will say, and again, because we've talked about the LifeProof before, I'm not going to go into great detail about this particular specifications of it because we've talked about it several times here on the show. I will say that I felt that the screen looked a little bit better with their screen cover. You can see that it's there, but it was a lot better than the Pelican. As a matter of fact, I tested the Pelican before I went back to testing the LifeProof again, and I was really happy switching from the Pelican to the LifeProof specifically for that reason. Honestly, the only time I really noticed the screen cover was when I was looking at it from a side angle. One issue that I have had with LifeProof cases in the past with the iPhone 5 is issues with the noise cancellation mic. On the iPhone, there's multiple mics all around the case, and it seemed, and some of those mics are used for sampling the sounds, the external sounds, and then actively canceling those out so the person on the other end of the call doesn't hear those. I had some real problems. I tried two different cases. LifeProof sent me an extra one after I complained the first time. And I had this problem each time. And it was really the worst when I was walking through an airport. You know how noisy an airport can be. You get a lot of announcements coming over loudspeakers. And what actually ended up happening was I could hear the person on the other end, but they couldn't hear a word I was saying. It seemed like I was being canceled out, and all they could hear was the overhead announcement in the airport. LifeProof told me that this was something that, well, they didn't exactly say they hadn't heard of it before, but they sort of hinted that it wasn't a common complaint. Yet when I did some Googling around, I found that this was something that people have certainly talked about on the internet. A real positive for cyclists with the LifeProof case is they offer two different types of mounts for the bicycle. The first is the handlebar mount that we've talked about here on the show before. The other, and the one that I really sort of prefer, is the stem mount. It replaces, it goes in where your stem cap is, and I think it provides a very, very solid mount and a great location for mounting a phone. They also offer a car suction cup mount, which I used on a recent trip. Went probably about a 2.5 hour drive, put it up on the dashboard. The air conditioning was on, but one of the problems that I found was that the combination of the sun and the phone being in the case and being on nonstop using the GPS and being attached to power, the phone actually overheated and shut down. And I have never seen that before if I was using the phone without a case. And I think that was sort of the combo of the case and the sun. So you should know about that. I mentioned earlier before about the headphone port, something you need to know about, that with the LifeProof case, you need to use their adapter, which comes with every LifeProof case. It's sort of easy to lose and sort of easy to go, oops, I didn't bring it with me on this trip. So that's sort of a downer for me. And with the newer iPhones, specifically the iPhone 5S, as many of you know, the iPhone 5S now has what's called a Touch ID sensor for the home button, which means that you can unlock your phone using your fingerprint. Well, with either of these cases, you are going to lose that fingerprint capability. You can still unlock it using a passcode, but you will not have the fingerprint capability. And I'm really quite interested to see what each of these companies does with that new technology and how they work their cases around it. As far as pricing, I tend to look at real-world pricing. On Amazon right now, you can get the Pelican ProGear Vault case for about $79.95, whereas you can get the LifeProof case for about $40. So again, between the two, if I were to choose, and I had to use one, because I'm always worried about dropping my phone, I'm worried about it falling in water. I drop my phone all the time, so I'm always worried about impact resistance. Between the two, I would probably choose the LifeProof case, but for the issues with the noise-canceling microphone. So if that's not something that worries you too much, I think that that's probably the way that I would personally go. If I was looking for the ultimate in impact resistance, working in a lot of industrial environments, perhaps in construction, in a factory or those kinds of things, or for instance, if I was taking this on a lot of mountain biking trips or if I was doing a lot of mountain biking, I think that I would definitely go for the Pelican. As for impact resistance, to me, it seems like the Pelican is going to win hands down. For water resistance, sort of a more attractive design, and also for better screen quality, I think I would probably choose the LifeProof. But in either case, just realize that you are likely going to lose some functionality in favor of protection. But if you consider what we pay for these devices, you know, a lot of times you get them on with a new contract, so you get them at a discounted price. But if you were to break one and you had to pay the full price for one of these devices, you'll be glad that you have one of these cases on your phone. So go ahead and check it out. I do have links in the show notes to where you can purchase these and where you can get more information on both the Pelican and the LifeProof iPhone protective cases. Next up is a review that I've thought long and hard about. It's a book review. A review of a book called Rumble Yell, Discovering America's Biggest Bike Ride, written by Brian David Bruns. Now, I say that this is a review that I've thought about for a long time because what you're going to hear is the simple fact that I didn't like the book. But when I heard about the book, I was instantly drawn to it. I was told that it was the story of Brian, his friend Aaron's friend Cheek, and Aaron's father, Doc, and of their adventures participating in, well, something that's on my cycling bucket list and quite possibly yours as well, the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa, better known to you and to me as RAGBRAI. RAGBRAI is perhaps the world's largest multi-day mass participation cycling event, taking place every summer, taking cyclists from one end of Iowa to the other, in the heat and up and down hills, and through a lot of consumption of pie. I was really intrigued by this book because I've wanted to do RAGBRAI for so long and because I know friends who have done it and who have told me such wonderful things about RAGBRAI. So I thought, all right, I haven't had the opportunity to do RAGBRAI yet. I would love to do it. This will be my opportunity to participate, to experience RAGBRAI through the author's eyes. But here was the problem. To be completely honest, I didn't enjoy the book. I didn't like the author's perspective. I didn't appreciate his sense of humor. I didn't like his writing style. And I said so to his agent. I wrote to her and I said, look, you know, I think maybe it would be best if I didn't review the book because I really didn't like it. But nevertheless, she wrote back to me and said, please, we want you to review it. The author would love to hear what your perspective is. And so reluctantly, here goes. The simple fact of the matter is the author made me mad within the first three pages. And then I was so distracted by that that perhaps it may have colored the rest of my view of the book. It's also quite possible that this book really isn't intended for you or for me or for anybody else who would actually consider attempting RAGBRAI. Instead, it may be for those people who just consider the rest of us crazy. And so, with that, knowing that going in, I don't really understand why it was sent to me. Having said that, how'd the author make me upset? Well, within the first three pages, he must have complained about his wife, I don't know, two or three times. And the way that he did it, it really kind of made me mad. I happen to like being married. I happen to like my wife. And so to read about somebody who was so, or at least seemed to me to be harboring some real ill will about the fact that he was married, really kind of made me mad. It had me focusing on that instead of focusing on the cycling. And the story of these two guys who were trying to rekindle a friendship after having been apart for so long. And I was just thrown early and I really was really never able to get back on track. Now, it's said that the author writes with a humorous style. So it's entirely possible that he considers himself kind of a modern day Henny Youngman. This was sort of his way of saying, take my wife, please. And while I've laughed at Youngman and Rodney Dangerfield when he's made jokes like this before and virtually every other comedian, I just couldn't relate. And in fact, I was kind of offended for his wife and I was offended as a husband. And it really sort of got to me. Another thing that got to me was I really got tired of the author alternately bragging and complaining about the fact that he lives in Las Vegas. It got so bad that at one point, and I was reading this when after my shoulder surgery, so my arm was still in the sling and it was kind of painful to write, but I scribbled in the margin on page 121 out of 264. I scribbled in the margin after he complained about Las Vegas's heat one more time. I scribbled, enough already. I was just tired of hearing about it. Plus, let's talk about his humorous style for a moment. When he realized he was going to do RAGBRAI, when he made the agreement with his friend that he was going to do that, he said that he went shopping in Vegas. And he said something to the effect of, Vegas has five bike shops and I went to every one of them. Small towns have five bike shops. I've been to Vegas. I've done a lot of the rides that the author has talked about multiple times and enjoyed them, whereas in a lot of cases, the writer didn't. And trust me, Vegas has a lot more than five bike shops. And so again, this is where I'm trying to say that maybe the book isn't written for cyclists because most cyclists would look at that and go, huh? Five? Are you serious? Finally, as I said, I just couldn't relate to the author's sense of humor or what the book jacket calls hilarious. The situations that he relates in the book, especially as regards RAGBRAI and the rides and their preparation therefore, they were either totally unbelievable or they quite frankly made the author and his friends seem stupid. And since the author has a series of books that have been national bestsellers, winning lots of awards, the Cruise Confidential series, and he's been in lots of national media, I choose to believe that maybe his humor just isn't my cup of tea. instead of believing him to be as dumb as he portrays himself and his friends to be in the book. I just can't believe that. Now, you know, besides not relating to a sense of humor, his friend's spray-painted bike, their lack of preparedness for a multi-day, many-mile bike ride across a very hot and hilly state, and sort of the Three Stooges feel of the story as the author related it, I was kind of confused by the pacing and the passage of time in the book. In addition, there were paragraphs in the book that I know they were supposed to sound like they had been spoken by real people. One in particular, he asked Doc, who was his friend Aaron's father, he asked Doc a question, and the paragraph that ensued sounded to me like it had come out of perhaps Ragbri's press release or right off of their website, instead of being actual words that would be spoken by an actual person, least of all the person that he had described in the book. So I've given the book a lot of thought since I finished it about a month or so ago, and because I really felt bad about the fact that I was going to be giving what you can tell has been kind of a negative review. All the reviews I've seen online were by people who simply loved the book, and they loved the author's sense of humor and the story that he told. For me, perhaps it was just that I couldn't relate to the author. His feelings about his wife and his marriage, his sense of humor, or the concept of arriving at Ragbri so unprepared and with such a chip on my shoulder about cycling as the author had going into Ragbri. And parenthetically, just to be clear, when I say unprepared, I don't mean the author, because he definitely did prepare by doing a lot of rides in advance of Ragbri. And kudos to him because, you know, again, living in Las Vegas, he'd have to go out very early in the morning and sometimes at dark in order to avoid the heat. But his friends were so unprepared for the ride. So again, it just left me with the following conclusion. Perhaps the audience for this book is not me. Perhaps it's not you. And perhaps it's not those who would actually think of doing Ragbri, but instead for those who think we're all crazy for putting on tight-fitting clothes, going out in the heat, the cold, the rain, the snow, the mud, intentionally making ourselves suffer, putting ourselves on a bike for days at a time in the heat with thousands of other cyclists, with poor facilities, unknown roads, rumble strips, bugs, and everything in between, and actually enjoying it. For those of us who would, in my opinion, this book isn't for us. The book is called Rumble Yell, Discovering America's Biggest Bike Ride. It's written by Brian David Bruns. I do have a link in the show notes to Amazon where you can buy it if you're so inclined. All right, one more segment to bring you before we get to our contact info and, of course, our PodSafe cycling music is an interview I did earlier this summer with the folks from Culprit Bicycles. This, again, was at press camp, and I finally was able to fit this into the show, so my apologies to them for taking so long. But I think you'll find it very interesting because they have a very unique concept when it comes to their bikes and how they get them to you and where they get shipped to you from. So without further ado, here is my interview from earlier this summer with the folks from Culprit Bicycles. It's fun at press camp every year to meet new brands that you haven't seen before. Maybe they're new to the bike industry. And I'm here talking to Joshua from Culprit Bicycles. Joshua, if you would, briefly tell me the history of this brand that is new to many of us.
Sure. The Culprit's been around for about a year now. We launched last July, but I personally have about 8 years in the industry working in Taiwan with a lot of OEM manufacturers and a lot of small brands, and just saw where they made their mistakes and where they can improve. And from that, I kind of launched my own brand with the designs, my own designs that I feel are unique to the market.
And so we're going to talk about the specific bikes in a moment, but what really is your philosophy? What's the design philosophy behind, especially your high-end bikes?
Sure. Culprit's core values are break, breed, bond, and by that we mean we want to break the innovation of the rules. You know, we've broken UCI rules on a lot of products already. We have a very high-end kids racing bike that nobody's done before. So we do want to break the way people see bikes coming out into the market. We also want to breed innovation, which you'll see through our product designs, as well as bond with our customers. We are a consumer-direct brand who, you know, if you go on our website, you order a custom bike, you get to do a virtual bike fitting paid by Culprit. You get to choose your paint colors and all the graphics are chosen, but you do get to choose which color graphic decals to put on the frame, as well as we get to talk to you through the process and get to know you through the whole process from the start to the end.
So that bonding part is really important to you, to bond with your customers, because you are consumer direct. And I don't want to gloss over that. That's really significant. When, in a way, you're providing, I hate to use this term, but I'm going to, you're providing a project one directly from your factory to the consumer. Tell us a little bit more about that.
You know, with Project One, they do offer a lot of options, and they also offer a higher price point. Mm-hmm. We offer the same paint technology, but we do it at a lower price point, and we also offer you the painting all the way through. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at a Project One, you see the frame only. With Culprit, you can paint the handlebar, the stem, the C-post, all to match your bike. So let's say you like bright yellow. You can go with our yellow color that's actually very similar to, we chose it off of the Transformers Bumblebee yellow. Mm-hmm. You know, we love the color, and so from that, you can go on the website and choose a yellow frame, white decals, and you get the handlebar, the stem, the C-post, all to match that same yellow. Mm. No brand's brought the customization to that point in that color level.
Mm. And beyond just the color, which is, for a lot of people, very important, you're also giving them choices when it comes to their components as well.
Correct. Yeah, we are offering for three levels and price points with our complete builds. That's going to be Ultegra Mechanical, Ultegra Di2, and SRAM Red. But we are also offering about 8 to 9 different wheel sets from Token. So you can start with, even if you want no wheels, we know a lot of people have their expensive Zips and the Reynolds available, then you can choose a no wheel option that takes the price point off and lowers the price for you. But we also offer about 9 different wheel sets from Token, from an alloy clincher all the way up to 90 millimeter carbon clinchers.
And because you're going consumer direct, what does that mean as far as the savings that a consumer can realize by buying a Culprit?
You know, we are cheaper, but we're not that much cheaper because there's a lot of things that we factor into it. We actually pay the shipping for you from Taiwan direct to you. You know, if you buy a bike, consider direct, like a Canyon, you actually are paying for the shipping costs. You're paying for the box that they ship it in. At Culprit, we pay for all that. We also include a torque wrench with every purchase. You know, a Culprit jersey, it's a very high-end materials, as well as if you get the complete bike, we offer the bib as well. And we also offer, you know, like I said, the Rotol fittings, unique feature. So you are paying a little bit lower than the high-end brands, but you get a lot more for your money.
Now, okay, you mentioned Taiwan, you mentioned carbon, and the first thing people think of these days, it's interesting, consumers are becoming more savvy, they start thinking about open mold. Is that something that's in Culprit's DNA?
You know, it's something that I work in the OEM factories, and it just blows my mind to see the same frame with so many labels coming out the factory, and it bothers me. Mm. You know, Culprit is a brand that wants to be unique from day one. You know, we have a patent on our fork design on our crossblade model. We've applied for patents for our triathlon bike with no seat stays. So we are a brand that's pushing the limits, but we also do believe that every bike needs to be unique to our brand. And I design every product for our product line. So I've been involved with some of the designs. So if there is an open model, you know, some of our models are front triangles that are open models that I helped design 5 years ago in the factory. So it is my engineering behind the product. But unfortunately, we're a 1-year-old brand with a design that I helped with many years ago. Mm.
Now, let's talk about some of the innovations. You talked about the triathlon bike without seat stays. Tell everybody a little bit about, again, it's audio, so it's difficult, but describe it for everyone.
All right, well, you know, it came from the concept of soft ride. Soft ride came out with a beam bike, and the problem with the beam bike is, as you move the beam forward in your seat position, you actually lower your saddle position. And so we want to offer a bike that's got the full range of movement of a normal position, seat post, 5 different sizes, but to give you the comfort of no seat stays. And so, yeah, we took the seat stays out of the frame. And we're structurally working on the carbon layup. It's going to be probably another 6 months to a year before it comes to the market. But it's a bike that is, you know, if you look at a Cervelo P5, look at the bike, but without a seat stay. That's kind of the concept. It's not copied of their shape, of course. But also unique aspect of the Culprit Legend is it's a disc brake triathlon bike. So not only are we a bike without seat stays, we're also one of the first triathlon bikes in the world with disc brakes.
And not only triathlon bikes with disc brakes, but road bikes, traditional road bikes as well. Not a lot of disc brakes on road bikes these days. Why that choice?
As a racer myself, I've had enough, especially living in Asia. It rains a lot over there. And anytime you're racing in a carbon clincher or a carbon tubular, it's just scary. You know, it takes about 3 or 4 times to stop in distance. And even then, you don't know how to stop. Once the tire, the rim dries off, the stop power becomes too strong, too fast. And so to get around that, you know, last year TRP brought out some disc brakes, and I would live near the TRP factory. And so I started playing with what they had, and I said, you know, this would be fun to put on a high-end racing bike. A lot of bikes have come out with endurance road bikes for disc brakes, were one of the first high-end pure race bikes with disc brakes built into the design. Mm. It's an aero road bike. So, you know, we Culprit went to the wind tunnel recently. We found that disc brakes are slower in drag numbers compared to a rim brake. And so we wanted to design something that had aerodynamic properties to replace that loss of drag. And so our bike is an aero road bike with disc brakes.
Hmm. Now, we also were looking earlier at a fork that was a dual brake fork. Tell everybody about that.
Sure. You know, the whole concept of disc brakes is new to everybody. So we want to offer one bike that's good for everybody. So we actually designed a fork in the frame that has TTV rim brakes, which is actually the behind the fork and under the bottom bracket, inline aero road brake, as well as a disc brake on the same fork and on the same frame that can be removed and be super clean looking in appearance without actually causing people to look at your frame and say, ooh, those are disc brake mounts. And so it was a lot of structural design. We have the patent on the fork design, USA, Asia, and Taiwan and China. So it is a project that we spent a lot of time developing, and it does give the consumer the chance to build one bike two ways. You know, using Token C55 wheels, you can just take off the disc rotors and you've got a beautiful rim brake bike, or you can throw the rotors on, you've got a disc brake bike. Mm-hmm. And the disc brake bike only weighs 7.4 kg in SRAM red.
Wow. Now, in addition to the triathlon bikes, the road bikes, you've also got high-end kids bikes. What's the philosophy there?
Now, ironically, our friend works for Cannondale and came to us and said, I can't get a bike for my son. He wants to race triathlon just like daddy. He wants a bike just like daddy. And the thing is, dad's got deep wheels. Dad's got drop bars. And you don't find kids' bikes with these features. And so we wanted to make something that was for the triathlete in mind, for the roadie in mind, to share the sport. And if you look at a heavy kids' bikes, no kid's going to want to push around a 15 kg, 12 kg bike when they only weigh 40 kg themselves or 30 kg. And so our kids' bikes only weigh 8 kg, a little bit over. And they are, you know, the Junior 1 and Junior 2 have 40mm rear wheels, 30mm front wheels, CNC chain rings, Shimano 105 group set. You know, it's a very 7,000 alloy series. It's a very high-end racing bike. But we also found that people can't afford the extreme high-end version. So we brought out a lower version price point this year, which is our new S1 and S2, which with that, we also gave a lot more color. Mm-hmm. You know, the Junior bikes are more of the classy road elegance, but we want to bring a lot more fun to the Junior S1 and S2. And so those are 20-inch road bikes and 20-inch wheel, 451 size, and 650C road bike wheels.
And just to sort of comment on the detail involved, you were talking about the shifter throw and what you discovered when it comes to kids. Tell everybody about that, because I think it's those little details that really matter.
Yeah, we found the kids' throw ratio is actually a lot harder for kids to shift. So we found that with Shimano, the reach was too long. Even if you put the shims in for Shimano, it still didn't help with the kids. The hoods were too long. Things were just too big. But we also found that the throw ratio for Shimano was just too great. Of course, SRAM Red or SRAM is even harder because you got a double shift. And so we found that with micro shift, actually the throw ratios were shorter, especially the release buttons, more like a Campino style where they can just push a button and it returns.
So it's those nice little details that really stand out on the bikes. Give everybody an idea of where they can get more information about Culprit online, because so much of what you do is online. Let everybody know where they can find you.
Sure. Come on and visit us at culpritbicycles.com. That's www.culpritbicycles.com. And you can actually start looking at the color plays and play with the 3D image of the bike on the website, change your colors and look at the specs, and also look at our junior product line.
That sounds great, Joshua. Thanks so much for taking us through the line, and good luck as Culprit grows over the years to come.
Thank you very much.
And with that, it's about time to bring this very long show to a close. But before we go, I do want to thank our show sponsors. Of course, as always, Jensen USA. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast anytime you're looking for parts, supplies, complete bikes, nutrition, anything for your cycling needs. It's jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And of course, if you're looking for a new bike, road bike, mountain bike for yourself or someone in your family, make sure that before you make your decision, you go and check out Fazari.com. Fazari Bicycles, they're giving you custom, quality, and manufacturer direct. You're going to find a great deal at Fazari Bicycles, Fazari.com. Make sure you tell them you heard about it here on the Fredcast. Now, if you'd like to stay in touch with everything that we do on a day-to-day basis, please visit our website at www.thefredcast.com. Follow us on Twitter, simply Fredcast, or of course, go ahead and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/thefredcast. If you'd like to send an email, the email address is thefredcast@gmail.com, or we love hearing your audio comments. Go ahead and use the voicemail that's available to you on our website. Just click on that link on the right-hand side of the page or use our Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. And that having been said, you know what time it is, because we've been doing this since episode number one, and it will continue as long as the Fredcast. It's time for this week's PodSafe Cycling Music, which was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by IndoorCyclingMusic.com. IndoorCyclingMusic.com is the home of the free weekly featured track and premium members content. And they have weekly 30 and 60 minute cardio mixes, as well as monthly 90 minute cardio mixes to get the world and you moving. Get more information at IndoorCyclingMusic.com. And this week's PodSafe Cycling Music is by Swamp DeWomp. It's called Rock This Country. Hey, thanks for staying subscribed. Thanks for telling your friends about the Fredcast, and thanks for listening. It's always my pleasure to bring the show to you. I've got another one coming up real soon, so stay tuned. But between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
Wheels keep a rolling all night long, laying down a rhythm to sing my song. Town to town, up and down that lonesome highway, cornfields or city lights, the telly where we go.